What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of This Is Hot Boga, brought to you by ASAT Camo. Our host, Joe, has been working with ASAT, and I have been using their pattern for a long time and absolutely love it. Nothing else on the market like them. Really stands out. Check them out, asatcamo.com. Next up, Black Eagle Arrows. We hooked up with them into our journey into the traditional archery hunting world. It's been a great journey so far, and they've really been hooking it up with us, so check them out. They're awesome arrows, blackeagles.com. Next up, Styrka Optics, awesome optics company, love their gear. We were able to interview Brad, the sales manager over there, and just had an awesome time, so we'll probably have him back on here in a little bit. We post about them all the time with our Styrka Strong and Styrka Saturday, so check them out on our Instagram page and also on their website, styrkastrong.com. Next up, Seek Outside. Seek Outside has some of the best tents, stoves, camping gear you could ever ask for. Super lightweight, super durable. We look forward to using them on our next coming hunting trips out west. Getting it done. SeekOutside.com. Our next sponsor is Stokerized Stabilizers. 100% American made, so you know it's built well and strong and tough. We've been working with Stokerized for a while and can't say enough about their quality as well. They also get our groupings really tight, which we like. StokerEyes.com. Next up, New Breed Archery. Seriously, some of the best bows in the industry. We can't say enough about the RK1s that we just got. They're also doing direct sales to customers, so go ahead and customize the bow however you want. Talk to Kyle, he'll hook it up for y'all. Check him out. And finally, our final sponsor of the day is Northern Broadheads. All the way down from Australia, they've got some awesome products, well built. Again, we don't deal with anything less. Check them out, northernbroadheads.com.
Yeah, so you're out in Colorado, right?
Yep, yeah, so we're out of Grand Junction, Colorado.
Oh yeah, yeah, been there. Yeah, we're gonna try to hook up with you. Me and Tom head out. I'm actually rifle shopping right now for that trip. I know this is a Hot Boga podcast, but you know, I'm going with my dad, my brothers, you know, a guy I knew growing up, so they ask you to go rifle hunting, you were rifle hunting, so.
Yeah, exactly.
So yep. you're in the Grand Junction area, you're mule deer hunting. You've got some time in. Have you seen anything yet this so far? Or?
Yeah, so I put a stock on a mule deer. That Sunday of my hunt, so the last day. And then, you know, I got within about 60. Some does came in and kind of like hooked up with him and started hanging out in the area, and they were just, he was bedded and they were kind of feeding around him, and I was using this little rise,
yep,
as some cover, and basically this doe just fed over the rise, and I looked up and she's just like staring a hole right through me,
right,
and I was like, oh crap. And so yeah, then she blew out of there, the other doe blew out of there, and then finally he kind of caught on to what was going on, and he walked out and within 60 yards of me, but he just kept moving, and I was trying to just kind of get him to stop by making some noise at him,
right,
just kind of, you know, ewing at him, and he was just like, nope, I'm gone, dude. I know this game.
It's a 4-point. I was gonna say, so you're in Colorado. Like, what type of mule deer is a shooter for you? I mean, Colorado's got like the best mule deer population,
arguably.
in terms of arguably.
Yeah,
you know, any mule deer that is legal, I guess. You know, there's guys like, I just hung out with a guy who waited 7 days on this one buck, watched this buck for 7 days, and until that buck was like, he was able to stock that buck in a good location where, yeah, he knew he wasn't going to get bumped by the wind, or, you know, the buck wasn't going to be able to see him coming in. So he waited 7 days on it. I didn't have 7 days for this hunt, so the most stockable deer I saw, which ended up being the only deer I saw the whole time, I put a stock on him. So, but you know, like the weekend I was out scouting before, I found a 200 inch mule deer. And he was kind of hanging around some smaller mule deer. And, then we found another, probably like a 180.
Right.
I'm not the best at like field judging deer.
No, I'm not either.
And really, like, I don't care to be like a really good like judge of deer. Because then it'd probably keep me from going after a deer that I should definitely have been putting a stock on otherwise. Just because I'd be like, oh, he's a 180, but then that guy over that I saw over there,
he's 183.
Is 190, know, and just really start screwing myself. At the last day, I was like more worried about filling my freezer, really than killing a big mule there. So I put a stock on the only one I saw, and unfortunately couldn't make it happen. But I've got like till the last of September. Let me look at my calendar. I've got till September 23rd. So I'll go out for a week, and then have one more weekend to hunt mule deer. So I'm going to try to make it happen that last weekend.
Sorry, mule deer hunting, is that like your bread and butter? I mean, is that your favorite thing to hunt, or are you more of an elk guy, or is it just whatever season?
You know, I find myself like flip-flopping between the two. I really love hunting elk until hunting elk is not fun, you know? Until it's just too hot and I'm just hitting, like, I've hit every ridge within, a freaking 5-mile radius.
Right.
And it's just like, okay, at some point, like, I gotta know when to give up and like go do other things or try a new area. I like both of them. I was really into this mule deer hunt, and still really am. I wish I could have got out last weekend. Going into this mule deer hunt, I was really, really excited because I got into 11 bucks in one weekend.
Yeah, wow.
Which like four of those were real good shooter bucks, ranging from 180 to 200 and up. I was really excited. The excitement's still there. I just wish I could do it more. But then this elk hunt, I'm really excited just because, I'm going out with some more friends, a buddy of mine who moved out to Nebraska. So we're going to like be kind of getting together for the first time in like 365 days.
Wow. And, not that anyone's counting or anything.
Yeah, no, I've just got it marked on my calendar. No big deal. There's no bromance there.
No, you don't miss him, and you got a picture of him on your wall.
No, cool guy. But every year he comes back and hunts, and that's kind of like how we get to hang out, So it's gonna be a lot of fun. Get to go out with my dad. We're going to take the horses, I think, this year for this elk hunt, which is something that
that'll be awesome.
We haven't done in a while, so it'll be kind of cool to get back into that. I've been doing a lot of the backpack hunting thing, which is fun. I freaking love it, and we'll never stop doing it, but there's just something really cool about packing into backcountry on horseback with a string that is just, it's just cool.
I agree. And I think that'd be a good segue into talking about some of the packs that you guys have.
Time on a sec. Before we do that,
come on.
Let's let Lee introduce himself.
Can
you tell us who you are, what you do, who you work for, before we get into your backpacking expertise?
I'm Lee Harrison. I work for an outdoor gear company called Seek Outside. Basically, what we do as a company is make lightweight, backcountry-ready gear, ranging from, large teepee tents to smaller, pyramid teepee hybrid tents. That's kind of our name for them, is that pyramid teepee hybrid.
Yeah.
They're all floorless, but, we make a ton of accessories to go into our shelters, like floors. You can put floors in our shelters and screened in rooms, all sorts of accessories. We've got more than you can shake a stick at. We also make wood burning titanium stoves. These things are light as crap. I'm telling you, having to put them in your backpack and pack them with your shelter.
Yeah.
And some combos can be like 4 pounds. It just kind of depends on what side of the tent and what side of the stove you're looking at.
Well, having a fire though in your tent.
Your game changer.
It's nice that I always, when I'm always in a tent, I'm like, I want to be by the fire, but I want to be in my bed at the same time. You know, I want to be warm, but I want to also be laying down because I'm tired.
Yeah, but we've even taken boiling hot water and poured it into a Nalgene bottle and then putting that down by our feet in a sleeping bag. And that actually kind of stays warm the whole night.
It stays warm, but there's no warming glow, There's no, by the time you're in your tent, that's it. You're done for the day. It would be nice to be able to hang out in there, especially if it's raining really hard or snowing and you're just trapped in your tent for a while. That fire. That stove in there that's a big deal.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny, like when people like go out with their stove for the first time, they're like, man. I mean, the response we usually get is usually game changer. I don't know. They like to toss around game changer a lot. Which if they're saying it, we're gonna say it too, And so these stoves really are a game changer, As far as like you're inside your shelter, it's raining outside, but you are like toasty inside, or it's snowing outside and you're toasty inside because you've got this wood burning stove that's just going. And there's just something about like hearing the crackle.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Being able to see flame, it's just like, just adds some level of comfort to what might have been a kind of crappy backcountry hunt,
yep.
As far as like you're wet, you're cold, your feet are tired,
yep.
And you just want to like have some level of just comfort, to be able to wake up the next day and really be on it as far as like getting after the hunt. Getting after hiking up mountains, it just adds some level of comfort that is just kind of unparalleled.
Sure.
Anything else.
So, say you're up on your trip up in the mountains or wherever you are, and you've got your stove all hooked up. It's rolling already with your fire. How hot is this thing gonna get? Like, am I able to, throw like a metal cup on there and heat up a cup of water? Am I able to do any kind of cooking on this or what?
Yeah, so you're able to cook on top of it. I actually like on bigger trips where I can kind of afford some more weight to be packed. I'll bring like a whole percolator and boil water for coffee or whatever.
Jared's percolating right now.
I've dropped on top of it before, like just not in a pan, just on top of the stove. I've cooked brats on top of it.
Oh wow.
Cooked all sorts of little goodies on there, brats, burgers, a little steak even.
You get like a little tenderloin action out in the woods. It means you probably had a pretty good hunt. And you throw that on there.
Say you get an animal down.
Yeah.
You're really, maybe it's just pouring rain outside and you don't want to try to start a fire in the rain. You've got a fire going inside, man. Just throw some back straps on.
Sounds like a game changer.
That's the sweetest meal.
Bring them up to temp.
Yeah, we've had a couple of those. I think one time Jared and I, we were out turkey hunting and it rained. We got that turkey.
Yep.
So we
almost got washed out, too.
We almost got washed out underneath our tent.
Set up in a washout and it just stormed all night.
Yeah.
So.
And so, but that turkey, man, we had that in some wild ramps that we cooked up in that little pan. That was that was a money meal.
That was good.
Yeah. That goes down as one of the better meals. Lee, I need your expertise. So I'm headed out, and we've talked about this a little bit. I'll be camping for 5 days out in the backcountry in Colorado. It's an elk hunt. I'll either be with someone or by myself most of the time. I've got one of my brothers, Jake, says he's going to camp with me. Maybe he will, but I don't know. He's never camped in the woods this long. So I guess going into it, what if you were me, what would you pack with? What would you, starting with maybe the type of TP, maybe the type of pack, and then the stuff you'd bring?
Okay. Yeah. So I'll start with the backpack, just cause we'll just start with the base that's going to hold everything. Mm-hmm. Backpack I'd probably take for 5 days would be something like our, Goshawk 4,800 cubic inches.
Yeah. I think sweet.
Cubic inch pack.
Is that like a standard size? A 4,800, 4,500,
4,800? Yeah, you know, anywhere between that 4 to 5,000 is a pretty standard size for that 5 to 7 day hunt, really. You know, if you're going pretty minimalist, you know, 7 days wouldn't be an issue. So it's a pretty standard size. You know, I sometimes get away with our 3,500 cubic inch bags for a 5 day thing. But that's just, you know, I'm not taking a whole lot of extra clothes. I'm just kind of being a hobo and, you know, just kind of going through that.
True
those motions of just, you know, I'm not changing clothes. I'm not washing clothes.
But if you
I'm
go merino, you don't need to change. I wore merino last year for 7 days in a row. I got some merino undies this time, so I don't even need to change my undies for the whole week. You don't get any stink with those things.
Yeah, there's guys out there who would be like, not change my underwear for 7 days. But, you know, if you're just like, if you just don't really give a crap, just make sure your wind is right, man, and you won't worry about it.
I've seen Jared go with his Fruit of the Looms for at least 7 days.
I don't wear cotton.
Yeah, there you go.
After that trip, I never wear cotton.
Yeah.
But Lee, you guys have a 7,300 cubic inch pack too, right?
Yeah, 7,400.
Oh, 74,
actually,
okay.
Yeah, I mean, Jared.
That's an extra 100. You need that extra 100 inches.
Those are those packs are both the Brooks and the Saker 7,400.
Okay.
The difference between the two packs, like if someone were to go on the website and kind of look at them, they might be like, hey, these are like the exact same pack.
Yeah.
The difference between them is their frame platform.
Yeah.
So one of them is on our integrated platform where the frame is integrated into the bag. And then the other one is on our Revolution platform where the bag is able to break away from the frame and you're able to carry a load, whether it be a quarter or whatever.
Sure.
In between the bag and the frame.
Less cleaning up that way, cleaning out the bag, because you got, if you throw a bloody stump of a leg in your bag, then
that's the thing. You can't ever get blood out of fabric. Well, you can, but
yeah. But at the same time, I like a little blood stain in my fabric because I can be like, yeah. I had a shirt one time with some bear blood on it, and I wore that with pride.
Well, that's the thing about our backpacks is you're actually able to get the blood out of them pretty easy because our backpacks are made out of a fabric that's called X-Pack. If you're not familiar with it, it's got a lamination on the inside where if you put something bloody on the inside, really all you do is zip it open or open it up, take a garden hose to it. You might have to use your hand, kind of rub some spots. But all the blood's going to come out and you're not going to get any stink. Like just a regular Cordura is going to get stained and it's going to stink after a while. But this X-Pack is a laminated Cordura that actually doesn't do that. So it's really nice. So if you do get that Brooks backpack that's on that integrated frame style,
yeah, that's
and
sweet.
You end up putting a quarter inside, which the Brooks has an internal load shelf, so it acts a lot like our breakaway. It's just inside of the bag. You put it inside the Brooks, and then you take it home, and it's, you know, maybe you're dumping blood out, but you just take your garden hose to it, and man, it's pretty much good as new.
So before we get into what you put in that pack, what did you run in your elk hunt or your mule deer hunt?
So I was out there for 4 days. I ran the Goshawk 4,800 cubic inch backpack with our top lid. Our top lid adds about 500 or so cubic inches, and it's got like a little internal accessory pocket that like I put my headlamp and crap in.
Yeah.
But I mean, in that backpack, I had a rain jacket, two pairs of socks, an extra pair of underwear, a merino vest because it got cold up at 11,400 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And going up, you know, I had our I'll just kind of run through the whole list and then get questions. And then I had our Cimarron shelter, which is a 4-person to 2-person, 4 without a stove, 2 with a stove. And it's our pyramid teepee hybrid. So it's got that rectangular footprint instead of a completely circular footprint. The Cimarron is really nice. It stands about 6 feet at the peak. So I can, you know, put my pants on inside by like kind of like hunching over. It's not going to have fully stand up, but it's also got, you know, you don't have to worry about, well, I can't put it up here because the tree limbs are too down low and the footprint's kind of smaller than some of our other shelters. So it's really nice to set up. It's really easy to set up. And then what else did I have in there? Had a kill kit.
Right.
What's your kill kit? Bags.
What do you put in your kill kit?
What's that?
What do you put in your kill kit?
Let's see. So I have got a little custom knife that a guy out of Parachute, Colorado makes, and it's Damascus steel. It's got some ivory in the handle, so you know I'm not gonna lie, I'm kind of proud that I don't run a similar knife to everyone else.
I'm a big fan of the old Damascus steel.
Yeah, but if I were to compare it to a knife, you know, it'd probably be like the Benchmade Hidden Country, I think they call it.
Okay, yep.
So if someone wants to compare, I got 4 game bags that will fit boned out elk or bone in deer quarters, plus another one for like your tenderloins, all that good stuff.
The candies.
I've got cordage to maybe like if I find an animal and it's kind of like rigger, you know, yep. Gotten into some good rigger, I will be able to use that cordage to kind of help me maybe lift up that leg and really get to, getting that skin off the hindquarters quicker. Yeah. But that's pretty much it.
Did it rain on you at all when you were out there? I mean, so last year I actually made the bold decision to actually not take any rain gear when I went elk hunting, and actually it didn't rain at all. This year I got some rain gear because I've heard that's like something you got to prepare for. Do you what's your approach to the rain? What do you do?
I will take a rain jacket if I suspect light or no rain.
Right.
So I will still take a rain jacket just in case, because you never know when there's that just super crazy afternoon squall that will just like wet you to the bone and just suck. You know, it won't kill you, but it'll just suck.
Right.
And so I'll take a jacket all the time. If I suspect it's going to be like, you know, Pacific Northwest type weather, Alaska weather, where it's going to be raining day in, day out for a few days, you know, I'll take my jacket and my pants, my rain, like my full rain kit. But other than that, I usually always pack the jacket with me.
It's a nice shell and a windbreaker, too.
It is. If there's a really chilly wind in the morning and, you know, I'm just cold, I just throw it on and it's like a windbreaker. So it kind of has a dual function there. And, you know, there's a lot of, you know, mostly everyone can agree that everything in your backpack should have multiple functions. And a jacket can, you know, be looked at as just kind of having one function, but
right. You
can have, you know, because I'm sure there's someone out there who packs a separate jacket for the rain and for a windbreaker and for their puffy, they're taking like 3 jackets. I'm sure there's a guy out there who does that, and, you know, and but that's how he wants to do it. And by God, if it makes him feel better, then he's totally right to do so. But it's getting a little heavy for me.
Yes, no, I agree, and that's the way I approach it. Is like, you know, what can I get away with leaving at home? What can I have dual purpose? So, you know, I'm always starting with merino. Anything that touches my body is merino, like my skin. You go over the top of that with, we have the Highwood hoodie from ASAP, but I mean, there's a bunch of other types of things there. Then on top of that, I'll throw like a puffy if I'm sitting still. Actually, a lot of guys have puffy pants that they put on too. The thing that I've been running is a kind of a little blanket that I literally, when I'm glassing or even when I'm sitting in the woods up here in Michigan, I'll literally wrap my legs in that, because I always hunt on the ground anyways. And then you can pack it away if you don't need it. Same with the puffy on top. And then you throw on top of that the rain jacket and windbreaker. That's kind of like a shell too. And then every single piece that you have in there can either be used while you're hunting or if something goes really wrong and you're out there, you're like, well, I at least have a puffy coat, puffy pants to sleep in, and I'm comfortable enough to make it through the night.
Yeah, you kind of just want to have gear that's multi-purpose and can help you hunt harder and longer, really.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, that's pretty much what everyone, I think, their ultimate goal is to hunt harder and longer and, you know, just make the hunt overall just more enjoyable. But, you know, you got to, like, kind of, like, plan for the season, too, you know?
Right.
Like, I'm not going to take a puffy really early season.
Right.
I probably should have took one up at, like, 11,400 feet. It got kind of cold, but I had that merino wool vest of mine. So that kind of helped keep me warm. But a puffy would have been a full puffy jacket with, you know, hood and everything would have been pretty nice to have taken up there because it did get really cold.
The problem, though, with the puffy
early in the morning
is I feel like people never use it right. Like, they'll throw the puffy on and then they'll go hike a couple miles.
Yeah, you tear it.
Well, you tear it, but also you get, like, it's not, I mean, you get way too stinky. You end up stinking and sweating a ton because that's supposed to just, that doesn't breathe at all. And I think that's the big thing. Like, just once you're sitting down, if you're glassing for a couple hours or if you're sitting in a deer stand, you can get away with puffy. But, man, if you're walking around with that thing, you're going to get hot and stinky fast.
Yeah, it's basically for when you're sitting still or hanging out at camp and trying not to shiver, you know. But, yeah, as far as what I took up there on that mule deer hunt, I think that's pretty much about it, other than, you know, my bow and binoculars and a bino harness.
Yeah. Question for you. When you're out there, so a lot of guys that, you know, that we know growing up here too, especially, like, scent is everything. So your stuff is in scent-proof tubs. I mean, you're washing it in special stuff, and you're, like, you're religious about your scent. You're a guy that lives in Colorado. You're mostly doing out west hunts. What do you do for smell? I mean, are you using any scent stuff, or are you just playing the wind the whole time?
You know, I'm mostly just playing the wind, man. I have some, like, scent wipes that's, you know, supposed to kill your scent when you wipe down your body. But as far as scent goes, you know, I mean, I might spray my stuff down with some, like, deodorant, you know, some, like, the Dead Downwind is probably the biggest name in the game, I would say, at least for me.
Yeah, I use that product.
I might spray it down with Dead Downwind. I did spray my stuff religiously when I was hunting black bear about 3 years ago, but I was doing a lot of sitting where I, you know, wasn't going to be able to move in comparison to the wind. So, you know, if you're sitting in a stand, I can definitely see, like hunting whitetails, I can definitely see where Dead Downwind kind of really comes in handy because you don't always control the wind. But if I'm doing spot and stock, I'm more worried about checking wind direction and, trying to play the wind because that's going to be, I know for a fact he's not going to smell me if I'm playing the wind.
That's right. And, you know, I've kind of gone both ways, throughout my life, at least hunting. Do I go totally scent free? And I tried that for a while and I feel like I made myself go insane because there are some, it's like, well, what if I fart while I'm out there, which I'm going to, you know, it's like, well, that's not scent free. And then it's like, well, does that get a stink? That's definitely not scent free.
Don't tell
does that
John
get stuck?
Eberhard this.
Yeah. And then it's like, so then I went for a while, the total opposite way where I'm like, obviously I keep my stuff in tubs. But I'm just playing the wind. I hunt the ground and I bring, honestly, what I throw in my, everywhere I hunt, no matter where it is, I bring a little canvas, camo canvas, a chair, and I literally run and gun no matter if I'm hunting in Colorado or if I'm hunting in Michigan. So I can just sit down, pop that up, be ready to go.
You set up around like fallen trees.
Yeah, fallen trees and stuff. That's, I used to hunt out of a tree and then you'd be stuck there if the wind switches. Hang on.
Roll.
Must have had some technical difficulties there.
Great, yeah, no great. Now we have to cut out the whole conversation. You know, we, James
we've got
is
Tom,
having.
Tom's going to be editing this, and it's going to seem like nothing happened. Or he's going to leave all this in.
That should be great.
That's right. Yep. So, anyways, like I was saying, I mean, I went from one extreme to scent free to being so religious and like it was too much for me to even keep my, you know, my mind around, to not caring until recently. And I'm dabbling with this. I haven't done it yet, but I was reading about the Native Americans before they went hunting, they would smoke out all their clothes.
I was going to say you're going to dump yourself with porcupine piss.
Yeah, that's right. No, they would stand and they would smoke out their clothes, and their thought was, it might be a different smell, but it's a cover scent, and cover scents generally work better than killing your scent.
But don't animals associate smoke with humans?
Okay, think about this, though. Any deer that I live out in the woods, Lee, right, so I always have fires in my backyard. Everybody, I mean, they smell that all the time.
Domesticated animals. They're around other houses.
Yeah, still, you don't think the elk have... All I'm saying is this is something I'm seriously considering.
More
the only
you.
Reason
you
know I haven't done it is because the naysayers like Jared that have said, no, it'll never work.
Because the naysayers.
Yeah.
You know what? I don't need... You know what? There's like the crabs in the bucket. I'm climbing out and you're pulling me right back in. So anyways, that's... So when I'm out west, obviously it's all wind and I'm going to stink no matter what. Because you're walking and you're sweating and you're...
Yep.
You're doing everything. Yep. You're spilling on yourself and you're eating food out there. But out here, I might go the smoke method. So everybody just remember that. And now at the end of the year, so Lee, I just switched to a recurve too.
We both did.
So really, I'm just lining up excuses for not shooting anything. I'd be like, yeah, I tried the wrong method for scent. I'm shooting a recurve.
That's good. Cover
the tracks, man.
Cover your tracks.
Yeah, that's right. So I have a lot of excuses for why I won't get a deer this year, other than I just am not a good at hunting. So, all right. So questions for you next. I mean, we talked about what's in your pack. The big thing in your pack was the teepee. Obviously, the Cimarron Roan is one. You guys have a bunch of other ones. The biggest question you probably are asked, and then I wonder about, is what's the deal with no floor? Isn't that going to be like awful with, you know, snow getting in and stuff?
Or even rain.
So here's kind of my answer to everyone who's like, what's the deal with no floor? You know, that kind of just overarching, what the hell do I need to know that everyone else obviously knows? So no floor, I like a lot more, and like, this is my number one, and people are going to think it's stupid, but I don't care, because I like to shoot out of it. Mm-hmm. I can walk in with my boots on and not get anything dirty.
See, that's a big kicker. You know, if you got a tent with a floor, you got to take your boots off. They could be muddy, and then you got to worry about putting the boots back on if you got to, you know, go to the bathroom or whatnot. You know, I like that point.
Yep. And my biggest thing is, like, the cleanup when I get home,
yes,
is almost nothing. I like hang my, I might hang my tent to dry if it was like if I just got dumped on by rain. Might hang my tent to dry, maybe shake off some dirt that just kind of accumulated from the bottom portion touching the ground.
Yeah,
but then it's nice because I'm not home. I don't get home, and then I'm like, "Hey, hon, nice to see ya. I gotta like hang out in the yard for a couple hours cleaning my shit."
Yeah, right. Wiping it down, and yeah.
I get home, I just kind of throw it over. It takes me 5 minutes. I throw my backpack in my gear room, and then I'm hanging out with my fiance, and I'm not in deep shit, you know.
Right.
So it's nice when you get home, but you know, as far as being out there, here's my setup when I camp. I have a ground tarp. And we make ground tarps here. It's actually a 40 denier silk nylon, which the tent material we make is a 30 denier silk nylon. So it's a little bit stouter than the actual tent material, but that's just so no rocks, sticks poke up through the floor, or you know, when you're sitting there sleeping.
Does that fold up real nice?
Your air mattress and deflate it, you know.
Yeah, does that stuff fold up? I mean, like, a lot of the tarp material that I've used is like heavy and big. I mean, is yours like going to be a little thinner and easier to pack up?
Oh yeah, Yeah, it like packs up to like the size and thickness of an iPad probably.
Nice.
That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. So I take one of our ground tarps, and then I have a Therm-a-Rest NeoAir. Yep. And then, you know, I just have that on top of my ground tarp, and then I put my quilt on top of my sleeping pad, and sometimes I sleep with the quilt open, sometimes I sleep with it closed like a normal sleeping pad. Just kind of depends on how cold it is.
Yeah, those quilts are sweet. So you're not a sleeping bag guy, you're a quilt guy.
Yeah, quilts give you more room. For me, at least, I think a quilt gives me more room to kind of roll around and be like my normal sleeping self instead of like a mummy.
Right.
You know?
So what do you have? A couple bags? Do you use one bag? Is it like, do you have a 0 degree, a 30 degree? What is
I
that
have
like?
One 20 degree bag, and actually it's probably more like a 25, 23,
right,
some odd degree bag now, just because I haven't washed it yet after like using it 4, 5, 6 times.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, and it's 100% down. You know,
I was going to ask, is that like a synthetic blend or a down?
You know, you do have to take care of your down more than more than you do just a regular synthetic. you know, you gotta wash it in a front loader, you gotta take it to a laundromat, and you gotta dry it. And Eastman's Hunting Journal just put out a great episode on like how to take care of down sleeping bags, and they did something I had never thought about, which was throwing tennis balls into the dryer, and it helps break up all that down. Where before, you know, you're having to
clump up,
dry it for a little bit, take it out, and like fluff your pillow type action on your sleeping bag, throw it back in, let it dry some more. Whereas like you throw some tennis balls in there.
Yep.
Let them just kind of rock around, and it's breaking up all that clumped up down.
We use
and it probably works better than the other way.
Yeah, my wife actually has a bunch of those wool balls.
That's what we use too. Those things are sweet. I like those because I can throw them at Henry, my dog. You can throw them around the house.
Good
and don't break
Hank.
Anything.
Hank will take a punch.
He can take a punch. So, all right. So you get your bag in there. So I would imagine that's your number one question that you get, right? The floorless thing.
Yep.
Or is there something else? What else you asked quite a bit about teepees? Because I mean, it's like the age old way of camping in a teepee, right? But at the same time, like, there are few companies that actually make a good teepee, with you being one right now.
So another big question I get asked, you know, that's kind of the deal. That ground tarp I have is going to help this next problem, because it's not letting moisture come up from the ground. It's hitting that ground tarp and it's getting stopped on the ground tarp. And that next problem I'm about to get into is condensation. A lot of guys ask about condensation. You know, they read on a forum that, oh, I had this tent and, you know, the condensation was so bad. It was like it was raining on the inside, because then the wind would kick up and kick all the condensation off, or it, you know, whatever, whatever the case may be. But it's like it's raining on them, and the inside is kind of like, it's kind of like the term that people like to use when they when they feel like the condensation is real bad. But anyways, there's some things you can do even before you set your shelter up to combat that, and that is to set up in kind of drier locations.
Yeah.
What I mean by drier locations is, don't set up next to a creek bed.
You know, that'll fill right up. That'll get you all wet.
That is just, it's the air is just more wet there than not, you know, than in other places. Setting up on really lush green grass, while it might be nice to sleep on, that green grass is going to emit dew in the morning. And that dew is going to evaporate off, and it's going to collect on the inside of your tent.
Yeah, you're soaking wet when you wake up. Like your I always have my glasses with me. They get all drips on them and stuff when I've done that, which you hate.
Yeah, and then like stuff that you cannot help because you want to stay alive is breathing.
Yeah.
When you breathe, your breath has moisture in it. That collects on the inside of the tent. That creates condensation. So there's some things that we've done from a product standpoint to help combat that. One is a peak vent. Two is something that we call the line lock kit and or our shelter gatekeeper straps,
sure.
which allows you to pitch the bottom of the teepee off the ground a little bit. So, you know, they have like a 2 to 3 inch gap from the ground and the start of the teepee to help that airflow kind of come on under and work its way around and dry out the inside of your tent. Another one being a stove. If you're running a stove, it's going to burn off a lot of condensation.
Yeah.
You know, just the heat from the stove. I mean, it can get like, you can get it up to 70 degrees in the tent if you are really cranking it.
And then you really don't even need a quilt
or a
bag.
It can be t-shirt weather. I remember I've gotten like chased out of my tent by the heat before, you know, like, you come in, you got all sorts of layers on, and you're like struggling to get it off quick enough because it's so hot and you feel like you're suffocating.
But I want to interrupt you there a minute, Lee, actually, because I meant to ask this before, and I'm sorry to interrupt your flow here, but when you got that stove, what are you feeding in there? Do you bring a little hatchet to cut little sticks up, or what are you feeding the fire with?
Wood. I mean, I'm feeding the fire with wood, and different types of wood burn in different ways. Pine, you're gonna burn like pretty quick,
right? With those oils in there,
dirty. I feel like in my experience. Same with like oak brush. If you're burning oak brush, you're like breaking off branches and breaking it all up and throwing it in there. It's gonna burn kind of dirty. But you know, just hardwoods burn longer, softwoods burn shorter, burn for a shorter amount of time. But I actually bring a kind of a longer knife. And the owner, Kevin, kind of got me onto this. Instead of using a hatchet, I just baton all my wood. So if I've got wood cut and so it might be a little too thick or might be a little too long, what I'll do is I'll just set that, you know, kind of hack that knife into the wood, take another stick or whatever and
start to beat
the other end of the of the knife and just kind of push it through the wood, right? And it's called batoning.
Oh, okay.
That's kind of like the term.
Yeah, you're kind of just shaving off little pieces of your bigger piece.
Yep. And then if you need those pieces to be shorter in length, then you just, you know, break them over your knee. It's a lot easier to break them.
That's what
you do. So that's our kind of our method over here. We also really like to use silky saws over here. Silky saws are kind of like our deal for like when you can pack more weight, but you need, you know, some beefier tools, you know?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I've used those. One of those hand saws.
Yep. Yeah. They're just little foldable hand saws.
Yeah. It's like a pocket knife and a saw.
Silky saws are like our brand, our go-to brand, but you can find a lot of different kind of, similar brands that, you know, make similar tools.
Now, is this wood that you're bringing along with you, or is this wood you're gathering up from the surrounding environment?
Wood from the surrounding environment. Yeah, okay. I'd never packed in wood. But, you know, some guys go to areas where there is no wood. And so they will bring, like, a few condensed logs with them.
Right.
Like, buy those at stores. The thing about condensed logs is that those things burn really dirty, so you got to be really careful about it clogging up your damper and stuff. You can still burn it, no big deal, but just know that those condensed logs burn dirty compared to just natural wood.
Sure.
But so, yeah, I mean, that's pretty much the stove situation, man. It's pretty easy. It's pretty just kind of intuitive. They break down to, you know, almost flat, almost completely flat. And you assemble them. It's really easy. You just stick the legs up through the holes. Kind of, there's a process of just sleeving the sides into the front and back. And then the top and bottom go over those. Legs go up through the top and bottom. You put on some nuts to hold it all together and it's done. And then you roll up your stovepipe, put your stovepipe up through your stove jack in your shelter.
Push it right out.
Put it, you know, put that into your stove, and yeah, it's pretty much it, man. It'll take all of maybe 5, 8, maybe 10 minutes if you got some bigger shelters.
Now you're talking about this like you've got a fair amount of experience putting these things together. Now I've never put together a stovepipe in a tent before,
or a teepee,
Yeah. Now, do you recommend like kind of putting this thing together before heading out there, or is this something that's easy enough to set up for the first time once you get to your campsite?
You know, we definitely recommend setting it up in your yard, setting up your teepee, kind of getting familiar with how you do it. And that way, if you do it wrong, or maybe something was confusing to you at first, and you have like some really loose panel, you're not out there with some weird setup. You know, you can call in and be like, hey guys, set it up. It got this really loose panel, or, you know, it's kind of looks like a witch's hat.
Yep.
What did I do wrong? And then we can start to get you through the steps to make it right. But definitely burn in your stoves beforehand. One, they're just going to come together a lot easier. And you're going to get familiar with like what's the best way to start a fire in there. Bring some fire starter, I would say.
Yep.
Whatever your favorite style, whether it's soaking cotton balls and Vaseline or
Vaseline and cotton balls in a dip jar or dip tin.
See, I've actually gotten into fatwood.
Fatwood.
Fatwood is any kind of conifer tree that's dying.
Yeah.
But if it's dead, all of the sap will kind of leach down to the bottom branches, kind of where the branches connect to the trunk.
Yep.
If you crack that branch off, all that hard condensed sap is right there, and it makes awesome fire starter.
So do you put it in like a bag?
Yeah, you keep it. You'll wherever you find it, you can crack it off and kind of whittle down the end, and you'll see it. It almost looks kind of like a amber glass.
Really?
Which, yeah, it's really cool. It smells really good, and yeah,
nice
you just get little chunks of that and light it up, and it just burns.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm gonna want you to get me some of that. I have no pine. I have one pine tree in my whole. I've got I think 3 acres, and I've got one pine tree, and it's 6 inches tall, and I've been preserving it
because
I want to eventually make it into a Christmas tree and like decorate it.
Like
probably
like a Charlie Brown.
Yeah, exactly. Idea. Right now though, so it's not got any sap. So I'm gonna need you to get me some, or maybe we go out and find someone with chaga hunting. I had a question for you as a seasoned vet. Now, how long does it take you? Basically the modern day mountain man that you are. How long does it take for you to put together your Seek Outside TP/stove? I mean, if you had to go as fast, say if the rains are coming, like how fast could you go if you had to go?
Or who's the fastest that you know?
Okay, that's second question. Yeah.
I could probably do it in like 3 to 5 minutes.
You're telling me you could put together a teepee and a stove in 3 to 5 minutes?
No, he said the stove is 8 to 10 minutes,
yeah,
did you
but
say?
He's a pro. He's going to do it faster.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking really big. Yeah, I mean, it's going to take me longer to do a really big teepee.
Right.
But if I'm doing like the Cimarron and let's say a large stove, it'd probably take me, I'll be safe and call it 5 minutes.
Jeez, holy
dude.
Cow.
All right.
It'd take you me 5 minutes to get a tent.
We're gonna go camping with Lee soon and have him be the tent guy.
Your teepee man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely probably have camp ready by the time most people are. If they're setting up their tent, I can have camp ready by the time they're putting their rental on, and my tent's got a stove in it.
No, I've seen Jared put together a tent. It takes him like 45 minutes. He's slow.
Well, whatever.
He's itching his belly half the time. Just. Cursing,
more or less.
Scratching his head, wondering where the hell he put the steaks.
That's right. He's stepping on stuff. He's stopping to pee. He does. I mean, it takes him half the day.
I never get any love in this podcast, do I?
So Lee, there's an age-old question when it comes to backcountry hunting and camping. Are you a croc guy, or are you not a croc guy?
Or there, you know what? There's even like camp footies or like little slippers you can wear.
He's not wearing those.
I'm gonna wear those.
You better not.
I am not a croc guy.
Wow. Thank you. Guess who's wearing Crocs right now?
None of us.
The host, Jimmy.
I think they're just uncomfortable. And I know that's like against very popular opinion. I like moccasins, man.
Yes.
I like moccasins, and I will pack in moccasins. Now, I won't be packing moccasins on this elk hunt, but that's only because they got chewed up. I will actually be, and this is also probably going to be really against popular opinion right now, I'm going to be packing in a pair of like Nike sandals. So
ooh. Wow. Are the big strap with the big Nike swoosh Nike. On the black?
Yep.
That's a classic that's right there.
I had all the way back in high school.
Jared made it through high school. He picked up chicks with those with socks and sandals. So it's very sandals.
Let's get it right. Now,
mind you that I'm engaged and I was able to get a fiance whilst wearing those. I mean, I wasn't wearing those at the time I asked her, but I probably could have.
Your wedding would have been sooner, that's for sure.
Now, where you're going, is it going to be like rocky terrain, or are you talking kind of smoother, you know, dirt and whatnot?
You know, it's going to be pretty piney where I'm going elk hunting.
Sure.
Where I was up mule deer hunting for that buck, I was in some more rockier terrain, but I found a good grassy spot to kind of set up on. And I know I was like, oh, don't set up on lush green grass. But also, you can't really be too picky and choosy after like a long day of hiking up 2,000 feet of vertical gain.
Yeah, you get tired and you're just like, that's good enough and the green looks nice. Perfect.
Yeah, you just got to kind of, you know, go to the best spot that you can find without, you know, walking over to the next drainage.
Yeah. So the Crocs is one question. The other kind of question, and this is actually one I ask because, you know, I'm struggling deep in my soul about this. Trekking
down
poles.
In the plums.
Down in my plums. My trekking poles. Are you a trekking pole guy? Do you take a walking stick? Do you just pick one up while you're out there, or do you?
Or are you guys using that carbon pole that you guys have?
So I am newly a trekking pole guy. I have a pair of Black Diamond Alpine Ergo Corks.
Okay.
And that comes from falling off of a cliff.
Well, I'm glad you're here, first of all.
Yeah. I started a landslide pretty much. Was taken in the bottom of a creek bed. Rocks falling around me. Luckily, I wasn't crushed. I was like, when I hit the ground, I was like, okay, I'm alive. I may have broken some stuff. But also, I hear all these rocks coming down behind me, so I need to, like, cover my head. Turned out fine. Didn't really go to the doctor. But I knew my knee was messed up, so I went to some people who I knew were going into like sports therapy at the university that I studied at. Went to them and was like, "You guys check me out and on the cheap and tell me what might be wrong." Or I go into the doctor and say like, "Yeah, you might like have some bruising and shit, but I think you'll be all right." So. Went on some rucks and was like, my knee is not doing good. So I bit the bullet. You know, I went against what might have been some of my core values. I was, before this, never going to ever buy trekking poles.
Yeah.
Just thought that it was, trekking poles were kind of for sissies.
Yeah,
and
right.
I was proven wrong. I'm not going to lie. You know, I'll eat crow on that one. Trekking poles are off, and I'll take them for most every hunt. This one, I'm still debating just because we are taking horses.
All right.
But
it's like your four-wheel drive then. I mean, honestly, when you have two trekking poles, it's a, it's a big difference. So we went last year with my dad, and he was struggling with the elevation. We're the lowlanders here. But he popped. He got a couple of those trekking poles, and it made a huge difference. Yeah,
I feel like they're that kind of multi-purpose.
You can use them for everything. Holding my little tarp up that I hunt behind and stuff. I'm honestly thinking of having one just in my pack all the time. Yeah, it's interesting how much of a difference having a trekking pole can be. So the other thing actually I want to touch on with you is glassing. How much time do you spend glassing? What kind of optics do you run, or what power, and what's your approach to that?
So I will spend, it depends. It really depends on what hunt I'm on. Mule deer hunting, I will glass more often than I move. I will move to what I think is a good looking mule deer spot.
Right.
And glass a whole bunch. Whereas, if I'm elk hunting, I will kind of move cover more country than I do glass, but not by a whole lot. So mule deer hunting, I'm glassing. I'm using my binoculars to see country. Elk hunting, typically I'm using my feet to see country. But that's not always the case. It kind of depends on terrain. Terrain's really rough, and I just don't feel like killing myself. And I can see for a long ways. Like, if it's just super dense, wooded area, binos really aren't going to do me a whole lot of good.
Right.
Unless I can, like, pick out, okay, here's an old grassy avalanche chute. I'll just check out that area, maybe come back to it every now and then and glass that. But as far as, like, the types of binos I use, I have a pair of the Vortex Crossfires. Now, that's like Vortex's entry-level binocular. And they are 12 by 50s. I love those things to death.
Sure.
But I think, no, I know people are like, well, what the hell? But I think I'm going to move over into the Maven B2s. And those will be kind of like an upgrade, more along the Diamondback.
Sure. I actually ran some Diamondbacks for a while.
Vortex, these Maven B2s are kind of like the Vortex Diamondback, in my opinion. I might be kind of wrong as like the types of glass that each company is using, but kind of in my opinion, they're similar. But I really like the Maven B2s. They're just really crisp and clear and great in low light. I got a chance to use some in like some really low light situations, and it was great.
Yeah, we've been running Sturkas this year. I got ended up getting my wife one. I drove here in my wife's car. She literally keeps it in her car. She uses her binoculars. I don't know why she got obsessed with binoculars, but she takes them everywhere. Got herself her little pair, and she's got, I think she's running those marsupial gear bino harness, which I like, but it messes with my compass because it's got such a powerful magnet in it. Yeah. So I don't run it in the woods, but it is a nice pack.
See, I use the it's funny to bring it up because I was just having a conversation with my buddy from Nebraska about this. I use the Fish Hunt Fight Pro M large bino harnesses, mostly because there's no zippers, there's no clip, and there's no magnet. I like it just because it's a hook with a kind of like a bungee cord or shock cord.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And I just hook it over that, and it's really super silent. Both my bino harness and the Fish Hunt Fight rangefinder pouch have that same closure, and that's what I really like about that. So I just thought I'd kind of throw my own two cents in there.
I started for a while, hunting in Michigan, growing up, I didn't run any binos. I got older, got some, and I would just wear them strapped. Like, I've got even a picture, I think that buck I shot a couple years ago, Jared, they were just strapped to my chest with no cover. But you beat the crap out of your binoculars if they're just hanging out, which is actually one nice thing about those Sturkas, because you just send them in and they clean them out for you every year, which is really nice.
Nice.
Lee. Okay. So before this podcast, and this is kind of how I wanted to end, we put on Instagram, the opportunity for people to write in questions for you. So we've got a few questions for you to answer. Yep. I hope you're prepared. And just for everybody listening, we have not prepped Lee at all. So this is going to be
on the spot. All right.
Yeah, that's what I like. Usually fly by the seat of my pants.
Don't prepare for this.
So the first question we got is from Price Brothers Outdoors, and their question is, how far do you pitch your campsite from your proposed hunting area?
Okay, yeah, that's one I kind of get asked a little bit too. Okay. So if I'm hunting mule deer, I definitely don't want to be within sight of mule deer. At all. Like, so if I've got to go around the mountain a little ways, like mile and a half. Then that's what I gotta do. Cause those guys, those bucks can freaking see you just as well as you can see them with binoculars if you're out moving around and sticking around in camp.
Sure.
Elk, I you can get away with being a little closer. If you know a herd of elk is somewhere, they're in some dark timber a mile away. You might be able to kind of sneak up, but you just got to remember that they're up moving around at night.
Right.
And you're not. So you can't be like, you can't shoot at night. So even if they do come through camp, can't do anything about it.
At night. Yep.
So you just don't want to try to get in their feeding zones. If right. you're camping within a spot that could be a potential feeding zone, you're pretty close. You might be screwing your hunt, just because the elk will move around, feeding, go to a feeding zone, and bump you.
Okay. Okay. That's good. I can Thank accept you. That answer. Yeah. I got the other question I saw was, when you're hunting, do you typically pack your teepee on your back and just kind of camp as you go, or do you typically have like a base camp that you return to?
And did he specify elk hunting or?
I'm assuming he did.
We'll just say, for this purpose, let's just say in general.
Yeah, I'll say.
Usually I have a base camp. However, last year, we hunted in a spot. We were both elk and mule deer hunting, and we moved 3 times in 4 days.
Yeah.
We were assessing an area. It wasn't doing what we wanted it to be. It wasn't putting out animals like we wanted it to put out. So we moved. And that's kind of like the thing, I think. And I have definitely been suspect of this, like you scout an area all summer. It's freaking great. There's elk everywhere. Season opens up. You get in that same spot. You're ready. Nothing doing. Yep. You're just like, I'm going to sit and wait this out, when really elk are not going to come back into that area for another 14 days.
Right.
Until they get pressure wherever else they went, and then they're not coming back. So I will usually have a base camp mm-hmm. unless I know that elk are somewhere else.
Unless
and they're not
yep,
where
transient.
I'm at.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay. So the other question then is, one of the questions we got was, I think I've seen you have a couple camo patterns. Are you ever looking to add more camo patterns to your pack line?
Yes. We don't know what they are right now.
Sure.
I will tell you that we have had a lot of good talks with a company about getting another camel pattern, mm-hmm. Whether we do or not. I do not know, really. I can't, that's just the honest answer. I don't know. It's going to take a little bit more talking and figuring, but yes, that's the short answer.
Wonderful. Yeah. Well, I mean, Jared and I and Tom, we'll be running some Seek Outside stuff. And generally we wear the ASAC camel. I'm going with one of the solids just because I'm a classic guy like that. But yeah, there's a lot of cool camo patterns you guys have, and the packs, I know, are top notch.
Mm-hmm.
The other question I had was, is there a go-to backpack, like a do-all backpack that you would sell more of? So if someone's, planning something like it looks like from the east side, whitetail to occasionally elk to mule deer and,
Your overall
do everything pack. Yep. Where would you direct them?
So here, I won't give you a backpack recommendation based on species. I'll give you a backpack recommendation based on number of days and amount of gear.
Sure.
Just because really it doesn't really matter whether you're hunting elk with this certain backpack. As long as it's able to carry the gear for the amount of days that you need, if that's what you want. So for like short 2 day, like day to 2 days, maybe even 3 or 4, just depending on how minimalist you are.
Yeah.
I would recommend the Peregrine. I am running that on this elk hunt that is coming up. It's a 3,500 cubic inch backpack.
Okay.
I'm also going to bring one of our Merlins, which is a day pack.
They hook on the back, right?
What's that?
They hook onto the larger pack, those Merlins, right?
Yes, they do attach to the regular backpacks. So I'm going to be able to have my kill kit, some water, and maybe like my rain jacket in there. I might put that in there. That way, if I'm like, you know what? Elk hunting just really ain't doing it for me right now. I'm going to go hunt some grouse for camp meat. Put my big pack down, put my little pack on, go and chase a bunch of grouse and look like an idiot. Someone's probably glassing me from the ridge across, and they're like, dude, there's elk right below you. And I'm like,
nah, I'm worried about grouse hunting,
dude.
Okay, so the final question.
The final one,
we've combed through. Some of them were repeats, and some of them we kind of weaved in our covered in our conversation. The one that we haven't really covered yet, or at least not directly, is if you have one piece of gear that you would say is extraneous, or maybe it's overhyped by people, like that you don't see as important as other people would. What would be like one gear that you'd cut?
Damn, that is gonna be hard. One piece of gear that I would cut.
You should have prepped them.
Yeah, maybe you should have prepped me.
I like the painful silence.
Yeah.
I think I would even go so far to be like, this year on this hunt that I'm doing, if I am going to cut some gear, because I'm not going to do that.
It's not the moccasins.
I'm not going to do that.
Or the Crocs.
I'm not going to do that. Not going to. I am dropping my spotting scope for the elk hunt, which I took on the elk hunt, but that's kind of normal.
Yeah, and if you have to, a lot of guys bring both, but I mean like a 10x42, I mean, you basically can pretty much do whatever you need to with that.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, man, yeah, I think I would ditch, I'm in my gear room right now. Yeah. For everyone, I'm looking at it.
This makes it even better. I'm in, like, the suspense is killing me right now, Lee.
I know, man. You know, I think, goodness gracious.
Let me help you. I'll start this off.
I think I got it.
He's got it.
I will ditch my bugle tube.
Whoa. All right.
You know, I could agree with that. A lot of people are out there bugling. You can tell the difference. Those bulls are educated at that point. If you're quiet and you just play the wind and you hunt what you know, I mean, you can get away without not having a bugle.
Ditch the beagle.
I'm leaving him home. He's the worst. On the way here, before I got here, he was rolling dead. So
my reasoning is like, if you have this bugle, that maybe I might use it too much if I take it, where I got a cow call with me. You know, I've, the last couple of years in this area, I've had more success getting answers, getting elk to come in via cow calls than I have bugles. Maybe it's because I suck at bugling. But that's something, like, maybe you suck at bugling, so why take it?
Yeah, exactly.
Just do what you know you can do. And if you can't bugle, don't take it in bugle, because that's a waste of time. And, you know, you might end up getting elk into the next county, you know?
Right, exactly. And a little advice for you, Lee, for practicing your bugle. I know you've got a fiance, and so I'm going to give you some sage advice. I've been married now. I just had my eighth anniversary. Don't bugle in the house. I've tried the bugle in the house. I've also tried a lot of the turkey calls in the house.
Generally doesn't go well for me.
She doesn't ever appreciate it. My daughter loves it. Thinks it's hilarious. My wife generally just not a good idea. So
yeah, no, don't usually bugle in the house. I usually take that into the truck and
while you're driving. That. I roll down my windows and I blow it out the window all the
time. Scare the crap out of the dude.
They're just looking at me like, because I just got like a Primos, you know, one of their basic calls, and I'm just practicing because I won't take it out this year.
You actually came to my work
and bugled.
Bugled in the parking lot, and the guys at work said, "What in the heck was that?" I go, "That's just Jimmer blowing his bugle."
Yeah, I'm around. Yep. Well,
but yeah, man. So I think. Yeah, I think that's what I would leave.
Yeah. All right, that's fair. That's fair. I was going to say last year I went out, I did a couple things. First of all, one that I wouldn't bring, like last year when I drove out to Colorado, I brought a couple changes of regular street clothes, which I don't know why I did. It's like in case I go to a formal dance later on, I don't know why I did that. The other thing was I brought too many.
Or just walk down to the local restaurant.
So that was one, but that's not really what you're in the backcountry. The other one was I got some merino undies this year, so I'm bringing one pair. I'm only bringing one pair. Cutting some weight there.
That's too bold for me.
Cleaning myself.
Man, yeah, I'm gonna have to agree with Jared on that one.
Yeah. Well, you know, he's experienced the wrath of that enemy hunting in the past.
I make my own wrath, but I mean, I can understand maybe turning it inside out, maybe one or two days.
I'm
but
not an animal.
Yeah. How long are you going for?
It's only 5 days. I think I've gone recently without brushing my teeth for 5 days, and no one said anything.
You know what?
See, but I will take a toothbrush, and I won't even cut the handle off. So, what does that tell you?
You're not even that hardcore. No, I bring a toothbrush too, because if you feel gross,
people just immediately upon listening to this podcast, if you guys leave that in there,
yeah,
it will be like, this guy doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about.
It's a game of ounces, damn it!
Handle off his toothbrush. What the hell?
Yeah, I know. I'll bring a toothbrush. I'll also bring a little dish soap for my hair, because I don't like having a greasy head out there.
Yeah, dude, some dry shampoo.
Oh yeah, something, man. Dude, you get that?
Have any hair.
Look at my luscious locks. They get greasy, man. It's hard to believe.
I'm bald with a beard. I'm not washing my head. I will wash my beard, but I'll use dirt because I'm a man.
Yeah, I read something about how many feces are found in a beard, and
how do you get feces in?
I don't
your
know
beard?
How. How? What people? Why? Where are you putting your face? Get it out of there.
Where are you putting your face?
Get it out. That's not yours.
That ain't right.
Anyways, Lee, I appreciate the time. We've taken up enough of your time. Let's let you get to watching some football tonight. Thank you so much. We'll probably want to have you back.
Absolutely, because I've got a ton more questions for you. So let's definitely have you back on at some point.
Yeah, that's fine. I know. We were talking about like, oh, which backpacks for what, and I like did one answer, and then we're like, oh crap, we got to move on. So yeah.
We'll have more questions. We'll gather some more listener questions. But yeah, thank you so much for being on with us, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Lee.